Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 21st day of October, on a Domini 2023, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 8 minutes after the, 9 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. Before we do the news, let us remind you that it is indeed time to pay your dues. We are in a pledge drive. We come to you twice a year only, asking that that you reach deep into your hearts and into your pockets and keep this station on the air. As many of you already know, we don't get any federal or state or local funding. When we say we're member supported, we ain't kidding. The money we get comes from you directly. And if you want to support this show, if you want to support this station, then the way to do it is to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Talk to the lovely and talented Cheryl, and she will be happy to take your pledge. Takes less than 2 minutes. If you don't want to talk to a human being, you can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. While you do that, I will read the news. Windows 11 is consistently failing to capture hearts and devices, if recent figures are to be believed. Active device usage of Windows 11 is apparently inched past the 400 million mark, according to an internal Microsoft document that leaked. This is far behind where Windows 10 was at the same point in that operating system's life cycle. While Microsoft has yet to formally comment on that number, it follows the same trend seen in other usage statistics. Earlier this month, StatCounter figures put Windows 11 usage still some way behind Windows 10. As a reminder, Windows 10 took approximately 2 years to overtake the previously dominant player, Windows 7. Windows 11, which launched on October of 2021, not so much. Apologists for the operating system's performance would point to the very different conditions under which the software was launched. Windows 10 came on the back of the disastrous Windows 8 and 8.1 editions, as Windows 7 followed the self-inflicted catastrophe of Vista, and benefited from all manner of user encouragement from Microsoft. Occasionally, this included the OS slithering unwanted onto user devices. Other than occasional nags, Windows 11 has not been forced down the throats of users of Windows 10 in quite the same way. Windows 11 isn't a particularly bad version of Windows. Some elements of the user interface might grate a little, and there will always be users for whom one design choice or another will be loudly rejected. There were those, after all, who raged at the imposition of the start menu over the program manager of old. And, of course, there are those who simply hate change in any shape or form. But the operating system is itself fine, which, in a nutshell, is the problem. Windows 11 is simply okay. There's nothing particularly wrong with it, except for its hardware requirements, and indeed with a vague assurance that things would be more secure. Windows 11 at launch required updated hardware, including recent CPUs, that necessitated many users purchasing new hardware.
And then they lowered the requirements, so your old hardware would have worked.
Exactly. When faced with choosing between the perfectly acceptable Windows 10 or splashing the cash on new hardware for Windows 11, users shrugged, and so Windows 11 has languished. It has been some time since Microsoft released official figures around Windows usage, but the latest leak has confirmed the operating system continues to trail its predecessor. Windows 10 has just under 2 years left of updates before Microsoft intends to pull the plug, meaning Windows 11 has considerable ground to catch up in a constrained hardware market. Unless, of course, the company blinks and keeps Windows 10 support going for just a little longer, or starts throwing it on your machine, throwing 11 on your machine whether you want it or not. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 11 adoption is low. And your choices are, I love 11, I prefer 10, give me 7 or give me death, ME forever, baby. And I only put that there because Dave's not here this week. And win what now? So far, we've got about 119 votes. I Prefer 10 is in the lead with 68 votes, followed by Win What Now with 46. Shockingly, nobody said I Me Forever, Baby, and I agree with that, I suppose. And you can vote at our poll. It's real easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, and vote in the poll.
Now, it'd be interesting if we still had the old polls to go back 10 years and see how many people preferred Windows 7 over 10.
Yep.
Nobody likes the new thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. Unfortunately, our old polls only go back to, our old polls go back to 2019.
Oh, we didn't lose the polls in the website crash?
I saved the database.
Nice. So you had a backup.
I had a backup. So I don't know. It would be in there somewhere. Well, there's what OS are you using at home and et cetera, et cetera. So
got to find one about the time Windows 10 had been out for a little while.
Yeah. So so you can vote in our poll at soundbites.org. And, of course, you can give us a call if you've got a question or even better to make a donation to the station, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. And, of course, you can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. It takes less than 2 minutes of your time and will assure that this show continues to come your way for many, many years to come. Which we personally would like to continue to have happen. Dave, sadly, as you can hear, is taking a day off. He does this pretty much every year at this time. I believe that the pressure of the pledge drive is too much for him, so he takes a week in a sanitarium to get quiet again. So, but he'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can give us a call and talk to Cheryl. And you can give us a call and talk to us. But, listen, I alluded to this in here. The real problem is that Windows 10 is fine. It's not, 11 is not a huge change. It's not, there's nothing revolutionary. It's a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that, a little different here, a little different there. And people are kind of like, meh.
What about Windows 12?
Yes.
Well, Windows 12, of course, we hear all kinds of rumors. Yep. We don't deal in rumors here very much because they're almost always wrong. Even when they're right, they're only partially right. So what we have is Windows 12. The latest rumors are that they're still Microsoft is still heading toward an online version of Windows. They have told their stockholders that they are going to an online version and a subscription model where you will pay to have Windows access to Windows from the internet. I just can't see them getting that right the first time, but
I could see that for enterprise customers, most of which are used to paying an Office license. So we'll just throw Windows in there too. And you always get the latest version of Windows automatically. But enterprises would hate that half of it because they want to test it first with their own software.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
When I was doing it, and now that Dave is doing it, we didn't just say, good, new version of Windows. The phone book is out. We would test it like crazy first before we let any of our users have it.
Yep.
And sometimes we held it back simply because it really wasn't ready. I can't imagine any system admin worth their salt, who just randomly throws it on everybody's machine because it just showed up. You test it first, particularly when you have, when you're using software that isn't from Microsoft.
We've had several customers come in after their machine upgraded to the new Mac OS Sonoma, and suddenly their Quicken doesn't work, their Microsoft Office doesn't work, and whatever program they needed doesn't work anymore. And well, so restore from your backup. I don't have one.
Right.
Yeah. All right. You should always have a backup, but especially before you do a system upgrade.
Well, right. And it doesn't... it isn't easy, but it doesn't take a lot of time to go to the vendors that that you really use.
Yeah.
Go to their website and check to see that their software works with 11.
And just assume it's incompatible. At least for a few months until the first patch comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we talk about that in the Mac world, that you know Sonoma is at 14.0. I'm waiting for the 0.1.
Yeah, and everybody should.
Especially since the marquee feature. I said that backward. Yeah. The marquee feature is new screensavers.
Yeah, yes. And that's well, and of course, Apple has the same problem that Microsoft does. They have an operating system that works right every day.
What can we add to it?
Yeah. What do you add to it? It works.
But there's this inertia of annual upgrades.
Right.
Well, Windows is on a 3-year upgrade cycle, so Windows 12 is due fall of 24.
Yep.
And then 13 would be 27, and Windows 14 would be 2030, which is not that far away.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Don from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Don?
Hello. I have a problem with sound bites.
Okay.
And what's happening is my computer bites into the sound from my radio receiver. And if you can solve this problem, I'll add to a significant contribution that I've just made to Jazz 90.1.
Well, first, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So what do you mean by it bites into the radio sound?
Okay. What happens is that, well, first off, the receiver is about 10 inches away from the monitor, and it's a PC running Windows 10, which sits on the floor about 2 feet beneath the receiver. When I turn on the computer and it gets maybe halfway through boot up, the sound from the radio that I'm listening to decreases about, the volume decreases about 80%. And I'm wondering what causes this.
Usually it's interference between the EMI the radio is putting off and the computer. We used to do that in the olden days. We put a detuned radio next to the computer.
And
the radio, well, would play music, and when you're playing your games, you could make explosion sounds.
Right. So the radio sound decreases 80%. Do you hear other sounds as well? Do you hear clicks or static or hissing or anything?
No, not whatsoever. And it doesn't appear to contribute to any distortion of the station that I'm listening to.
It just decreases
the volume 70 to 80%.
And this radio is not in any way connected to the computer itself?
No, it's not, and it's operating on an independent outdoor FM antenna.
Electrical ground? I'm getting a 60 hertz hum in the headphones, but I don't know if that's us or him.
If you're getting a hum in the headphones, it's my landline.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The computer in tinfoil.
Wrap the computer in tinfoil. The first thing to try is they make plugs that have a, what do they call it? The magnetic.
RF
filter.
An RF trap
or RF filter.
Mm-hmm.
You might try throwing one of those on, I suspect, the radio. And see if that helps. The other thing you might do in this, and you know, Steve actually hit on it, put some tinfoil underneath the radio, between the computer and the radio. See if that helps you. But it is more likely...
A ferrite bead.
Ferrite bead. Thank you very much.
On the power cords.
Ferrite core.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do I get one of those?
Amazon.
Okay.
Look for a ferrite core, and basically...
Local hardware stores.
Or local hardware stores have them as well. They're a little... donut-shaped thing.
If you've ever seen a big, like, bulgy thing on the end of a cord, typically USB cords, that's the ferrite core cutting down on the electromagnetic interference.
Right.
Because you run electricity through a wire, that's an antenna.
Right, exactly right.
And so that antenna picks up signals you don't want it to, so the ferrite bead will cut that down.
But this is a high-quality Technics receiver, and it has a separate... antenna input for it might, AM and FM.
It might be coming through the power cord. So you typically you put the ferrite beads on the power cords of your devices.
It's called ferrite bead.
F-E-R-R-I-T-E.
From the Latin ferrus, meaning iron.
Exactly. Right.
But it's a ferrite bead, B-E-D.
Ferrite bead, ferrite core, ferrite trap.
Ferrite choke.
Ferrite choke.
Usually,
a bunch of different names for the same device.
Okay. It looks like a little barrel.
Yes.
And you put your cord in it and then close the barrel around it so the magnet is wrapping the wire.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good suggestion. I will try that, and I'll also try tinfoil or a metal plate underneath the receiver, hopefully magnetically isolating that from the computer on the floor.
Exactly. I have to ask, what brand is your computer?
It is a custom-built computer by...
You don't have to tell me the name of the company. Yeah, you don't have to tell me the name of the company, but it may well be that they did not properly ground it or isolate it.
EMI shielding on the inside.
Right.
Although what happens a lot, I see, is the little EMI fingers that are such a pain when you're trying to open the case, you end up bending them and breaking them, and when you close the case back up, now there's less filtering.
Yep.
Well, I will talk with the company about that and explain the problem to them and see if they have any other insight.
Sometimes just moving the radio farther away or using a different electrical plug... can help too?
Well, it's both are plugged into a surge protection device on the supplying power to each.
And that may also be part of the problem. If that surge suppressor is, you'll forgive me, cheap, it may not be properly shielding each plug from the other plugs.
Except that I'm using the battery option because I definitely do not want the computer to immediately crash in a power failure. So I have the USB or whatever they call it, battery backup.
Yep. That's a good thing to have.
And that's running the computer and the monitor, but not the radio. The radio is plugged through just for surge protection.
Yeah, that should be protecting. Try the EMI shielding, and you can buy sheets of that online.
Which looks surprisingly like foil.
Looks surprisingly like foil. You can get anywhere from...
We say tin foil, but nobody uses tin foil anymore. It's aluminum.
Right. It's not aluminum. It's aluminum.
Aluminum.
In fact, the guy who created aluminum, who was British, called it aluminum. It wasn't until much later they started calling it aluminium. It's because they got to add a new U to everything.
Yeah.
At any rate, you can buy a sheet of it for like less than $25.
Okay. And is that a ferrous or non-ferrous metal?
That is the EMI shielding. So it's a sheet of fabric with a wire mesh in it.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's not aluminum.
I don't think it is.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Because I have a steel plate that I could use as well.
Try it. See what happens.
Which is perhaps a little less penetrable.
Yeah, give it a shot. See what happens.
You want it to absorb the radio noise. You don't want it to let it through.
Right.
Well, I think something is happening. Radiation from the computer that's affecting the volume,
right.
Audio volume on this receiver, and it's just really strange because the receiver is well isolated in terms of, as I say, it's an external antenna.
Let me ask you to do one more thing, just for grins and giggles. Try plugging the radio into a different outlet, just for the heck of it, because it is possible that the draw on your UPS is somehow interfering with the radio. Just try plugging in another outlet, see what happens. Can't hurt.
Okay.
That's the cheapest solution, quite frankly.
Or should I, is it worth trying the computer and the monitor plugged into a different circuit?
Whichever's easier.
6-1. Moving the radio is easier.
The same. The radio is easier. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's another good suggestion. All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
And thank you again, Don, for your donation. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Okay. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You see that? Here's somebody who made a donation to the station and got multiple answers to their question. Well, answers. Multiple things to try, which hopefully will result in an answer to their question. It's your turn. Make a donation. Give us a call. You don't have to match those two things. If you want to just give us a call, you can. But we would appreciate it very much if you would also make a donation. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Talk to the lovely and talented Cheryl, and she will be happy to take your donation. She will also be happy to pass you on to Michael, who will then get your name and where you're from, and we'll put you on the air. Or, of course, if you're leaving a donation and you don't want to talk to a human being, you can always go online at jazz901.org and make your pledge there.
Apparently, Schlegel in Henrietta is the industry leader in EMI shielding products.
Excellent.
According to their slogan.
And I'm sure they're absolutely correct about it as well.
So what's interesting is they have conductive shielding and they have absorption shielding. So you got to know which one you want.
Right. I would imagine in this case, absorptive.
Yeah.
One of the things we've always had a problem with, and particularly now that everything has a cord, and everything has multiple cords, is radio frequency interference, RFI. As Steve said, you get a wire with electricity running through it, that's an antenna. And antennas not only receive radio transmissions, they also produce them. So we're throwing radio waves everywhere.
Remember the old stories,
all the time.
People would claim they hear radio stations in their braces.
Yes.
Because you got all those wires in your mouth. It happens to hit the right frequency to pick up that station.
Exactly right. All right, we are going to take a quick break, but we will be back. And by we, I mean all of us, including you. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And our Chandra wants me to remind everybody that they can join us in the chat, the Soundbites chat at soundbites.org/chat. While you get online and get yourself set up, we are going to... look, before we go back to the phones, let us remind everybody that we are in the midst of a pledge drive. And that means we need your pledges. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or pledge securely online at jazz901.org. And while you do that, we will talk to Brent from Fairport, New York. Hi, Brent. What's up?
Hi. I was going to call you with some Windows 11 questions, but forget about it because I dumped it and I'm now running Linux.
Oh, good for you.
And that's, you know, Windows wanted to use my computer for a playground.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to mention, too, I did send some money in 2 or 3 weeks ago in addition to my bigger contribution in the spring when I get the discount card and the blue bags.
Thank you so much.
Now, I've got another small computer that I want to put Linux on as well, and I've got it on a USB, and it runs fine on the USB, but when I go to install it on the computer, I get a message that says EXT4 file on creation in partition number 2 failed. And after that, if I just go beyond that and I try to reboot, the message comes up and it says checking media presence. And then it just goes back to the boot menu and it loops around like that.
Yeah.
I saw some suggestion that I shouldn't let it do this automatically, but I should define the partitions. The other question I wonder about is something wrong with my SSD in the little mini computer.
Well, yes. Wrong is, I think, an incorrect term. What the problem is when you create when Windows creates a drive on your machine, depending on when it was created and who it was created by and what, you know, like, is it a Dell computer or et cetera, et cetera. What they often have are multiple partitions on the drive.
Yeah.
And it is possible that those multiple partitions are problematic on the SSD. So as long as it boots properly from USB, one of the things you should do is run a program called Disks. I think it's just Disks in the menu, but it's properly GNOME Disks. And you can...
Well, I can't. I can't run a program because I can't get into Linux or
no.
Windows.
You said it runs fine from USB.
Oh yeah, you're right. Okay.
Yeah. So you boot up the USB, you go in, you find the SSD, and then you wipe out all the partitions that are there. You have, of course, backed up all the actual data on that computer that you wanted to keep.
Right.
So you can then wipe out all the partitions there are. And just format the thing for EXT4, and then when you go to use it, your new system will say, "Oh, you've got essentially a blank disk here. I can do anything I want with it."
Okay. When I was running on the USB, and I didn't do much, I wasn't sure if I could see the internal SSD.
You should be able to.
Okay.
It may not be mounted, but under GNOME Disks, you should be able to see it, mount it, play around with it, do whatever you want with it.
What was the name of that program again?
GNOME, G-N-O-M-E. Yes, and in Linux, they pronounce the G. GNOME Disks.
I just posted a link for it.
GNOME-Disks.
Oh, good. Okay, so it's D-I-S-K. Is that all one word, GNOME Disk?
GNOME-Disks.
Dash Disk, okay.
Yeah. It may already be in your menu, possibly just under the name Disks.
Okay.
So, for example, on my system, I believe it's on under System. No, it's not under System. I wonder where it is. Maybe it's under Settings? Settings. On my Ubuntu Linux, it's under Settings. And it's just called Disks.
Disk, okay.
But, you know, your mileage may vary.
Okay. All right, I'll give that a try.
Let us know.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks, and congratulations on dumping Windows 11 for Linux.
Well, you know, I put Linux on a 6-year-old computer, 7-year-old. I've been running, Windows 7 on without a single problem during that time period.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was quite a shock when I started getting into it. Well, 11 worked fine for a while, but then it wanted to do its own thing.
Yep.
Okay, you've been there, so you know.
Yeah, I've been there. So thanks, Brent.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. We would like to thank a friend of the show, Al, for his generous donation. Thank you very much, Al. And you can join Al as a donor. For this station, it's really easy. We are in the middle of a pledge drive, and we are taking your pledges one of two ways. You can either speak to the lovely and talented Cheryl at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. Or you can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. And while you do that, we will talk to Al from Penfield, New York. Hi, Al. What's up?
Hey. I just spoke with the lovely and talented Cheryl.
Yes, you did.
She was wonderful and delightful. So.
She is all of that. Thank you. And thank you for your donation.
My pleasure. Hey, just a thought. Your gentleman two calls back about the radio interference.
Yeah.
If by chance he's listening, when did this problem start? Is this something that's brand new? Or is it a problem?
Right.
Something may have changed in his neighborhood, or a new electrical substation got put in, and now there's more noise.
Yeah, or he's plugged something in differently, or he's the radio is now a lot closer than it used to be. Or
the neighbor turned on a ham radio.
Right. Well, the problem, see, it's weird that it's just, it drops the volume by 80%.
And doesn't add static.
Doesn't it? Well, it might be adding static that you can't hear because the volume is down so low.
Yeah.
I suppose, but yeah, I don't know. That's, it is so weird. That is such a specific weird thing. That's why we gave him a half a dozen different suggestions.
One other thought. Any chance they're wireless speakers?
Well, he said it's a radio.
I know, but he could have wireless speakers.
He could, yeah. And that would be an interference. You're right. That would be an interference as well.
Yeah. So, oh well. I'm just having fun my day. I've been spending the last 2 weeks working on a computer problem, and so it's nice to hear someone else has problems, or maybe more solvable. So.
It's why we're here to have solidarity in problem solving.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Al.
Hey, quick question.
Yeah.
Any of the user groups get into technical discussions like do's and don'ts of Synology and Drobo NAS backups and things like that? Anyone play at that level anymore?
That's a lovely question. And if somebody knows, please call in. I don't know that.
I know Cider hasn't done in-person meetings for a long time. Last one we tried, only half the board showed up, and the rest of them stayed and joined the virtual meeting. But we used to have companies come in and show off their products like that, and most of the companies don't have that type of users group ambassador anymore. Sure. They just go to the website.
Yeah, you're dating yourself terribly.
Yeah.
I used to date myself, then I got married. Anyway, the point here, I think, is that if anybody knows of a group doing that kind of stuff, please call in and let us know.
You may want to go to, like, the Synology website, and they probably have their own forums there, too.
Right.
Yeah, that's good, but there's a limit. And face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball conversation with somebody is so much more informative.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Yeah, it used to be they, you know, well, it's like everything else. They used to come to us. Now we have to go to them.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the specialty PC stores and not the big box companies.
Right.
Might have someone that knows. I know we sell them, and I can right. set it up, you know, on your network, but I don't get that deep into it. In fact, we have generally gone with the Buffalo NAS because it's a bit cheaper than the Synology NAS. But Synology is kind of the king of,
yeah.
And that's why they cost more. Is they're that higher end, theoretically better made product. Yep. They just announced a new security camera system. So you got this giant hard drive. There's always been a network hard drive company. But now, just make some security cameras to plug in and record the video to the giant hard drive you already have.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. Tempting. But, yeah, no, the trouble is I've got firmly wedded into Drobo. And
then Drobo's now gone very unexpectedly. So we've had a lot of customers come in. Their Drobo still works, but now they're afraid of what they're going to have to replace it with.
Yeah, that's my problem is I've got 40 terabytes, and it's not going to be an easy task. So
wow.
It might be easier to buy used Drobos on the market and just use them for spare parts.
Until some OS upgrade breaks the software that isn't getting patched anymore.
Or I forget my administrator password and can't get in, and they no longer have a reset website. So yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Oh, well, the joys. Okay, well, I won't tie up anymore. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Al.
Love your show as always.
Thank you. Have fun.
Take care.
I was on somebody's network the other day, and it was weird. They had, I'm pretty sure it was a Synology, but the icon on the Mac was Apple's Xserve RAID instead of the Synology icon. So it saw this giant network disk, and the Synology's must have been just reporting itself as an Xserve RAID, which is another thing I'm dating myself with.
Right.
No, it was a 14-bay box, and you could put so many of them in a standard rack, you could have almost a petabyte of data. At the time, when the biggest hard drive out was like 6 terabytes or something.
Right.
Nowadays, you can get, I think, a 24 terabyte is the single largest terabyte you can have, or a drive.
Before we go back to the phones, we had somebody in the chat ask a question. We don't usually take questions in the chat because I generally can't divide my time quite that easily, but Rich says he's running Chrome OS Flex and a thumb drive, wants to use his scanner. It doesn't see it. I don't know that what you generally have to, you have to have separate software. So one of the things you might need to do, is check to see if there's an app for that scanner.
Is it a scanner alone or is it an all-in-one?
I believe it's a scanner all-in-one.
Yeah, because a lot of times the printing driver has scanning software built into the printing driver, too.
Right. Right, that's about all we can tell you right at the moment. I'll continue to look it up, but I don't have an answer for you at the moment. In the meantime, we'll go on to the phones, and our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. What's up, Steve?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I just launched Super-V, started using Hyper-V, sorry.
Sure.
Super-V. When I installed it, I did the Windows 10. And right at the end, it wanted to go online to finish the install, and it didn't see any Wi-Fi at all anywhere. I did some research, didn't understand what they were saying. Shut it down, started it up again a couple days later, and now I can't. So I still can't get to Wi-Fi, and I have no idea how to get to the page that asks me to go or to set up Wi-Fi.
Right. Okay, so Hyper-V is a pretty cool thing. It lets you run multiple operating systems and do all kinds of very cool things. The problem is that it isn't, you're right, it isn't good with some hardware. So if your hardware is in any way not on their list, and that could be because it's old or it's too new or it's not one of the four they support, you've got a problem. So if you can plug it in directly wired, that should make the whole problem go away. In terms of not seeing Wi-Fi, boy, that's a good question. Hyper-V doesn't have quite the same...
Yeah, is there a control panel somewhere or a settings panel somewhere?
There is a settings type of thing, but it doesn't say anything about Wi-Fi.
Yeah. So if it...
Hey, I stumped you. That's good.
Well, it the problem is it's a long and involved stinking thing. What you have to do is set up a new virtual network switch. And that's not something I can talk you through over the phone. But luckily, there's a website that you can go to. And Steve is going to take that information from me, and he's going to put that on our thing. But what you have to do is set up a virtual network. That's the way Hyper-V works. And if you have, like I said, if you've got hardware that's in any way outside what Hyper-V considers the norm, it can be a pain in the patoot. But there is a way to fix it, and it's a fairly involved website, but Steve's going to put up the link on how to do that. This is assuming it's not a physical problem, right? If you were in regular Windows and you could get to the network.
Yep, I can.
Yeah. Okay. Then yes, then, you gotta set up your virtual, a network adapter, or switch, I guess they call it. And you have to create that. You have to create a virtual switch, and then you have to connect it to your Hyper-V system, and you blah, 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 blah.
It's so long, a little tiny table of contents pops up
Yes.
as you're scrolling down.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it is there, and it'll tell you how to deal with it. Now, my assumption is you've got some other machine that you can go on to read this.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can read it on this machine. I just Hyper-V is a different
boot. Right. So yeah, give that a try. I don't know what else to tell you beyond that.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. That looked interesting. I was looking forward to having some fun with it, but right now it's more frustrating than fun.
Yes.
Welcome to computers.
Yes. Yeah. I completely understand that, yes. When I first started working with a Hyper-V type system, it was a pain in the patoot, partially because it was early days and maybe the tools weren't as mature as they are now, but it was a pain in the patoot. And knowing that you could get better help now is probably a good thing all the way around.
Hyper-V can trace its ancestry back to Virtual PC for the Mac.
Yes. Yes.
That Microsoft bought.
Yep.
An x86 emulator for your Power PCs.
Yep.
Is there another virtual software that would be better than the Hyper-V?
No. Slightly different, yes. Better, no.
Okay.
They're all pretty much the same. Basically, what they allow you to do is have multiple operating systems running, essentially multiple computers.
Right.
Running inside the Hyper-V system. You know, it's like you can run VirtualBox and all of those things now. This goes one level down. The operating system is Hyper-V, and then you run whatever OS you want on top of that. And particularly, you know, you've got to have a fairly hefty machine, et cetera, but once you've got it set up, it's actually pretty cool. You can run all kinds of operating systems simultaneously. Anything that runs, you know, Intel-based stuff, so...
Make a difference if I like I'm using the Windows 10, I could use Ubuntu. Would that make a difference?
No, you'd still be essentially setting it up the same way and doing the same things.
Okay.
So yeah, that website talks to how to do it in Windows 10 and 11.
All right.
Which is what you want, so go for it.
Thank you so much. You have a good day.
You too. Thanks.
Yep.
And why would one want to run a Hyper-V?
Well, there's a couple of very good reasons to run Hyper-V. One is you can have multiple operating systems, essentially multiple computers running simultaneously.
On the same physical hardware.
On the same physical hardware, and you can switch back and forth among them easily. So you could run Windows here, Ubuntu there, and they run independently.
Yep.
So if you've got enough, if you've got enough processor and enough memory and enough disk space, you can essentially have a room full of computers. All without having to spend more hardware or having to have multiple monitors around and whatever that's all about. The other thing is that you can isolate them fairly well from each other through Hyper-V. So as long as you're careful, you can do a lot of testing of stuff without interfering with your other machines.
Just a link to something called hyperjacking.
Yep. Yes, you got to be careful.
If you don't set up your Hyper-Vs properly.
Right. And that's an important step, but that's also talked about on the page that you just put up.
Yeah.
So you've got the ability to run multiple operating systems simultaneously. So it's like having, you know, instead of having four computers sitting in your on your desk with multiple monitors or multiple keyboards or whatever, however you're going to set that up, you just use a hotkey switch to go back and forth among them on your main monitor and system, and they're all running simultaneously. They're all doing different work, and they all work together. They all work separately, but at the same time.
Yep.
So that's the thing behind Hyper-V. And it was originally designed, as Steve said, for running Windows on a Mac, but what it became was a way to get a big system in the back room, a big server in the back room, that ran multiple operating systems, so you could run your files server and your web server and et cetera, all on one big box, which makes it easier. All you do is, you know, you buy a box with 24 gig of RAM and 16 cores and, you know, terabytes of data, and you just partition off the pieces you want as opposed to running multiple machines. And there are pros and cons to each of those things. And you know, yeah.
This is a very common.
Single point of failure, et cetera, yeah. I get all that.
Yeah, these are very common in server farms.
Right.
Where you've got 100 small websites hosted on one computer, all separated in their own VM.
Right,
their own
and you
VM.
Do it through Hyper-V, and each system thinks it's the only one on the machine, but all of them run simultaneously together, so it works out pretty nicely. All right, that music tells us that we are done with the first hour of this show, but do not despair, because there is a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. More Steve Ray, more Michael Oden, more Nick Francesco, and more of you. And it's easy enough to get involved in this show. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. You'll speak to the lovely and talented Cheryl, and she will be happy to take your pledge and pass you on to ask a question of us. And of course, if you just want to pledge, you can also go to jazz901.org. That's open 24/7 for those of you who are listening to the podcast. And we'll be back with a whole nother hour of this show. Take a bio break. We'll be back in a few minutes.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. And yes, we are in the midst of a pledge drive, and I will tell you, we're not doing well. So we would need you to make that call and make that pledge. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or pledge securely online at jazz901.org. And those phone numbers, by the way, you will talk to the lovely and talented Cheryl, who will be happy to take your pledge and or pass you along to us so that you can ask a question. So the numbers are the same for both things, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. And we're going to talk to Joe from Webster, New York. Hiya, Joe. What's up? Joe?
Joe or Jim?
I don't know. Which is it?
Jim.
Oh, Jim. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. I updated my iPhone to 17, and ever since I did that, everything lags. I even have trouble getting on the Internet through my Wi-Fi in my house. If I turn the Wi-Fi off, it connects pretty quickly. And I've tried everything. I've rebooted all my apps and got rid of all the background apps running, and it still does it.
Well, make sure you get the 17.0.3 update, the most recent version.
I did.
And
I did get the second one.
How long ago did you do this?
The last update, about 3 days ago.
Yeah, generally speaking, with a new upgrade, so the 16 to 17 upgrade, the phone like re-indexes everything, and it can slow down. It can run hot. There were a lot of reports of the new iOS 15, the iPhone 15 running hot. Usually it takes about a week to settle down after doing it. Yeah. On the Mac, you get a little notification that says your computer's optimizing and may run sluggish. But you get it once and then
never see it again.
Never see it again, yeah. I wouldn't expect so 3 days, you know, you're in that time frame where it should be starting to settle down. In the settings app, there is a way to see under battery what programs are using the most battery power, which generally means those are the ones that are running the most processor. You can see if there's anything using overall too much battery power, which could mean a runaway program. But it may be just the indexing and setup of iOS 17 that's starting, still hasn't quite finished yet. If it doesn't clear up in a couple of days, the usual fix is to back up, erase the phone, and then install the OS clean. Then do your restore from your backup.
Okay. Now, I have the 10R. My wife has a 13, and she doesn't have that problem.
13's got a faster processor in it, so it can finish these tasks faster.
Okay. Okay. Well, how come it does, when I turn the Wi-Fi off, it seems to connect faster?
So is it web pages loading faster on cellular over versus Wi-Fi?
Yeah, my Alexa app, for instance, the web pages. Even when I go to the App Store, it's very sluggish on my phone, but I turn the Wi-Fi off, and it goes right to it.
How fast is your Wi-Fi?
It's AX1500. And I did a speed test with my phone, and I'm getting over 200 to 300 megabytes per second, downloading.
On Wi-Fi or on?
On my Wi-Fi.
What is it on cellular?
It's actually less.
Yeah. Okay. That kind of makes sense then. If cellular is slower than Wi-Fi, things are going to be slower on Wi-Fi, on cellular.
No, it's the other way around. His Wi-Fi is slow, his cellular is fast.
Oh. Huh.
It's my Wi-Fi that's sluggish.
You tried turning Wi-Fi off and back on again in the phone?
A number of times, yeah.
There is an option to reset the network settings, but one of the things that does is forget the passwords of Wi-Fi networks you've joined in the past.
Yeah.
So when you go back to that place, you'll have to get the password again. But that is something you can try to reset your. Well, actually, before you reset all the networks, forget your network and rejoin your network, and then there is a complete reset all network settings.
Well, I did reboot my Wi-Fi. In fact, I went back to factory settings, then I had to set it up all over again.
What he's talking about is in the phone. You can forget your Wi-Fi network completely.
Right. I understand it. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll try that. Yeah.
Yeah, give that a try and let us know.
Okay, good.
Could be a DNS issue, and that's why it's better on cellular, because it's using a different DNS.
Yep.
When you factory reset your Wi-Fi router, do you remember which DNS it picked? Probably the ISP's DNS. We ran into a problem the other day. Someone was trying to log into trying to log into Netflix, using the Google DNS, it didn't work. When I switched to Cloudflare DNS, it worked.
Okay, that's just weird.
That's just weird, yeah. So maybe changing the DNS, I'm going to post this link I just found. Changing the DNS in your phone as a test, and then you might even change it in the Wi-Fi router. If you have a Windows PC, Steve Gibson has a program called DNS Benchmark that will test 20 different DNSs near you and see which one is fastest. And you would think that your ISP's DNS would be the fastest, but it often isn't.
Hmm. Okay, you're going to post that?
I'll post those, yep.
Okay, I'll look it up.
All right, good luck.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks.
When we're all used to 200 megabit, it's horrible when it drops, down to 100 megabit.
Yeah, right. There's a program for Linux also called, I believe it's called DNS Bench or DNS Benchmark or something that you can install and do that. Similarly, but yeah, there are online ones that work. The one from Gibson works very, very well.
And it also works on Linux under Wine.
Right.
On Mac under Wine. I've run it there, too.
Well, and there are online ones that'll say, oh, here's your area.
Speaking of Wine, we had a customer this week come in with his...
Let me thank Paul. Paul, thank you for your donation. Very nice. Thank you so much.
He was playing... Heroes of Might and Magic 3.
Oh, yeah. 3. Wow.
Which came out in 1999.
Yep.
They had a Mac native version in 2000, but it runs on a PowerPC Mac 20 years ago. So he was running it in Wine on his Mac.
Nice.
He said his son accidentally deleted it and he couldn't get it to reinstall again. So I had to go through to figure out how to get the game to work in the Wine, in the Mac, and it was interesting.
Yeah.
The launch screen starts up and you got that movie to explain what happened in version 2, so you're ready for version 3. And we're treated to glorious 2000 era Windows XP graphics.
Oh baby.
One of the problems that I've figured out is that the bottle he created was Windows 10.
Ah.
And the game was written for XP, so we made a Windows 7 bottle. One of the instructions I found is we made a Windows 7 bottle, 32-bit.
Yep.
And that finally worked right.
By the way, what he's talking about is Wine is not an emulator, but
It's a transliterator.
It's a transliterator, and it lets you run non-native programs on your system. So, for example, on either Linux or on the Mac OS, which is a mock kernel and is Linux-like, Wine lets you run Windows programs. Without actually owning
Windows. Because that's the other option, especially for games. A lot of Mac users would run Boot Camp, which lets you Mac dual boot into Windows only. And then it's one of the best PCs there are because Apple uses pretty high-end hardware.
Yep.
And so that's a way to use games on the Mac. But you have to reboot back and forth.
Right. And Wine lets you just run it in a window. The emulator, the setup you use is called a bottle because it's Wine, get it? So they call it a bottle, and then you set up whichever bottle you want. So you can set up a Windows 10 bottle, Windows 7 bottle, probably set up an ME bottle if you really are a masochist.
Yeah, and it's kind of what we were talking about earlier with hypervisors, that it allows you to run another OS inside your current OS so that you can run really old software.
Yep. And so lots of people use Wine on Linux and lots of people use Wine on Macs to run Windows-specific software.
And the Mac, it's often games.
It's often games. But, if you've got – well, I know people who run old versions of the one that isn't Money Dance.
Quicken.
Although you should run Money Dance because generally if you're running Quicken, you're running an older version.
Mm-hmm.
That ran under Windows 7, and it just doesn't have all the latest features, whereas Money Dance, which is free, does. So those are the kind of things that that you want to be aware of and pay attention to. All right, I'm going to read a news item. Well, you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. The global smartphone market contracted by about 8% to its lowest third quarter level in a decade on subdued demand for major brands, including Apple and Samsung in most developed markets. The data showed that the share of the top five brands, which also included Chinese firm Xiaomi, Oppo, and Vivo, had fallen to a three-year low. The report fans fears that the market's ongoing slump could sap upcoming earnings for companies like Apple, whose shipments declined by 8% in the quarter. Market leader Samsung posted a 13% drop in sell-through volumes in that period. Among those that gained market share in the quarter are Apple's Chinese rival, Huawei, which despite the strict U.S. sanctions against it, shocked the industry earlier this year with its Mate 60 Pro smartphone, uses an advanced, domestically made chip. But overall shipments rose 2% industry-wide from the second quarter, raising hopes that the market could snap its more than two-year run of year-on-year declines in the last 3 months of the year. The iPhone 15 lineup that went on sale in September has been cited as a factor that could help revive growth in developed markets such as the United States, Europe, and Korea. It is hoped that the upcoming festive season in India, the 11.11 sale event in China, and end-of-year promotions across regions would also support the market. So far, emerging markets have been a bright spot for smartphone sales in an otherwise dour year. In the third quarter, the Middle East and Africa were the only regions to record year-on-year growth. So are you planning on upgrading your phone? Give us a call, if you can. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. And while you do that, we'll talk to Rick from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Rick. What's up?
Gentlemen, thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
Every Saturday I have the same problem with my cell phone. I want to listen to you and watch you and then cast you to my TV. What do I have to enter into my browser to get you on my cell phone?
Audio or video?
Both.
What you should be, well, it depends on...
Well, the video stream is on YouTube.
Right.
So you'd go to youtube.com and /soundbites.org. Or on our soundbites.org website, there are links to the jazz audio stream and the YouTube video stream.
Okay. Did you say YouTube initially?
Yes.
Yeah, so what you can do is if you scroll down on our homepage at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, you will find Listen Live. And toward the bottom of that, you can see Watch Us on our YouTube channel. If you click on that, you will go to our YouTube channel, and then depending on what phone you've got, you can cast from there to your television.
And if you click on the subscribe button and the bell, then you'll get notified when the new shows go live.
Right.
Okay. When I first turned on my equipment this morning, I got you on the TV from the phone, but it was from September. It was a rerun. No offense, I didn't want to see a rerun.
It's understandable.
You probably just picked a random one.
Yeah, it just picks a random one. If you've got the YouTube app on your television, you should be able to find us and go to the latest one, the currently live one. But it will show you a bunch of them, and it may show them in a random order.
Okay. Is there a Soundbites app that I can put on my phone?
There is an app from Jazz 90.1, and one of the things you can do is get the audio archives from Soundbites. But in terms of a video archive, no, you'd have to go right to the YouTube channel.
Thank you. That solves it. I wasn't aware. Thanks, guys.
There you go. Have fun.
Thank you. I will. Bye.
Bye. So, yeah, you can see that, again, on the Listen Live page. You can listen live on 90.1 AM FM if you're around Rochester, New York. You can listen via the website at Jazz90.1. Just click on the Listen Live button. Wow. There's a Jazz 90.1. What was that?
No, that was me. YouTube.
There's a Jazz 90.1 mobile app. Your smart speaker will just say play Jazz 90.1 on TuneIn. You can watch us on our YouTube channel. I mean, come on. So aside from us coming to your home and putting on the show in your living room, we've given you a number of options on how to find us.
So youtube.com/soundbites.org/live brings up the current live broadcast at the current time.
Yeah, right. So you join the live broadcast
right,
wherever
so,
we
so
are.
So it joined us now instead of at the beginning of the show.
Right. So that's we do give you a number thing. That's all, Steve. Steve's got the OBS, the Open Broadcasting System, set up on his Mac and is sending it to, I don't know, 40 or 50 different systems.
Three.
Twitch and YouTube and...
Facebook. So that's another way you can get to us on our Facebook page.
Right. But I don't know how easily you could cast from there.
Yeah,
the
depends
YouTube
on your TV.
The YouTube app on pretty much both platforms has a cast option.
Yep.
So...
Some systems call it mirror.
Right. But if he knows the term cast, he's probably got an Android phone.
Yeah.
And the YouTube app will let you cast what you're watching directly to your television. So, yeah. I got to be honest, the technology is pretty slick these days, the things that are available. We don't always take proper advantage of them because we don't necessarily know about them. But there's just a whole bunch of stuff that you can do that, you know, 5 years ago was science fiction.
Yeah.
You know, when Tony Stark in the hearing swiped and the stuff from his little pad went to the nearest television, that's sci-fi.
Yeah.
But you can pretty much do that now from your Android phone or iPhone to your television set.
And we have 415 videos on YouTube. For free. So knock on wood.
Free. We've got over 1,100 audio things on our website.
We've got 342 subscribers. If we can get over 1,000, then we can start monetizing the channel.
Oh, boy. So everybody sign up for that.
We get 2 cents.
Yeah. And that means we'll start getting ads in the middle of everything.
Well, they probably do that not during the live show. You would just get our regular sponsor breaks that we do live. But when you watch the YouTube shows after the fact, they'll inject ads.
Right.
Usually at the worst possible moment.
Well, it's ads that you won't be able to block pretty soon because they're getting real antsy about ad blockers.
And half the time the ad is you should subscribe to YouTube. What is it? YouTube? No. What's the ad-free YouTube?
Yeah.
Ad-free, whatever it is. You should subscribe to that.
Yeah. Well, and the fact is they've already started. I was getting a notice that said, use an ad blocker. You only have 2 more views left before you. So I had to turn off my ad blocker. It's the most annoying thing on the planet.
And then
it's
the first thing that happens is you get attacked by a malicious ad and malware tries to get in.
Right. It's not that they're showing me ads. I understand, you know, Google, God bless them, doesn't make enough money. They need to be showing ads because, well, the fact is that they are a publicly traded company, which means it's the shareholders who are saying we're not getting enough money for our investment. You have to show more ads. I get that. I do. The problem is that they don't do it at a reasonable time. They just randomly, in the middle of a word, they throw an ad in. And it's usually when something interesting is being said. Right. And now I have to remember, because if I go back, I have to watch the ad again. And that's the part that annoys me.
And YouTube does transcription on the fly.
Yes.
You can turn on closed captioning. And it's doing speech recognition and text conversion on the fly, so they know when there's a quiet moment.
Yes, they do.
Maybe there aren't enough quiet moments, so they just put it in the middle of a word.
Yeah, it's just annoying. I have discovered that they don't yet put ads on the shorts that are usually TikTok things that happen there. But R. Chandra said, just to be clear, wine is not virtualization, therefore it does not require a hypervisor. It's basically a library replacement. Yeah,
it translates Windows instructions into either Linux or Mac instructions, depending on what your
He says this, it's either an X11 or Wayland call.
Yeah.
It just basically is a translator, basically. What it does is it lets you run your Windows program in a native window of whatever operating system you're on. So Linux or Mac OS, it opens up like a regular window. So you can run whatever that program is using Wine. It's pretty doggone cool.
It's amazing that it works.
It's amazing that it works and that it works well and that once you get it set up properly, it just works every single day. It's quite amazing. It doesn't really run the operating system. It runs the program.
Right, because you can get a virtual machine, VirtualBox or Parallels, and then you install Windows, and then you install your thing.
Right.
But then you have to buy a Windows license.
Right.
So that would be real Windows, and it's a lot more compatible than things in Wine. There's a commercial version of Wine for the Mac called Crossover.
Yeah.
And they have help people behind you. So if you buy their version, they'll help you with it. And one of the things that they have is a compatibility list of all the programs that work with it. So you can go to Crossover, crossover.com, I should post that, and type in the name of the program you think you want to try, and you can download a free trial of Crossover to see if it works before you spend that. Because if you buy Parallels, that's like $80. You buy a Windows license, that's $100 to $150. And then you find out your program doesn't work well.
Yep.
That's annoying.
That's annoying. But I do know that I actually know some people who need to run Windows only software, stuff that's only out for Windows, but they don't want to spend money on a dozen Windows licenses.
Yeah.
So they built Linux computers and used Wine. That's all free.
Mm-hmm.
Now they only are paying for that one program. It just works every single day. And again, setting it up may not be the simplest thing in the world. You may need to go someone like Steve and say, you know, help us set this up.
I like their.
But once it's up, it's up.
Their opening bit. Do you like buying Windows? You do? Great. You do you. For the rest of us, you can run crossover.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 31 minutes after the hour. Give us a call and make a pledge, 585-966-5299 or 1-800-790-0415 or pledge securely online at jazz901.org. We'll see you in just a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we are in the middle of a pledge drive. So please, please, please make the call, make the pledge, keep us online. We've talked about this before. We don't get government money. We don't get federal money, state money, local money. We get member support. And that's you folks. If you want to see this show, stay on this station. And if you want to see this station stay on the air, then you need to make that call and make that pledge. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We'll get you to the lovely and talented Cheryl, who will be happy to take your pledge and or pass you on to us to ask a question. But if you'd just like to leave a pledge and don't want to talk to a human, you can do that very easily just by going to jazz901.org and clicking the big donate now button. Real easy. While you do that, I will read another news item. On Monday, Netflix discontinued support for older TVs, with users encouraged to either upgrade or get new devices. Netflix ending support for old devices isn't anything new. We've seen waves of discontinuing support for devices over the years. In 2019, for example, we saw them pull support for selected old Roku, Samsung, and Vizio TV devices. News of this round of support dropping has been filtering onto forums for the last few weeks, with Netflix users being given ample warning that their devices will no longer be able to stream Netflix. I got calls from people. What happened to Netflix? You know those notices you've been getting for the last 3 weeks? Did you read any one of them? Any one of them at all?
Too much notice.
Too much notice. You're right.
I don't need to know what's going to happen in 3 weeks. I need to know what's going to happen tomorrow or now.
Right. Devices from Blu-ray players, the older Sony, Toshiba, and Samsung devices, as well as the PlayStation Vita and the PSTV add-on will no longer be supported. While we don't have a full list of devices that have been discontinued, it looks like most of the discontinued devices are over 10 years old. Why does Netflix end support for devices? Comes down to a number of factors, including security and providing a good user experience. Older devices that don't get patched can have security issues. In addition, older devices that are aging can become slow and buggy. And given Netflix is constantly evolving and adding new features, whether that's ad support, password sharing features, or interactive titles, they sadly can't support every device in existence forever. That's in addition to changing technical limitations. In 2019, a Netflix spokesrobot said the issue with devices that had to do with older devices running Windows Media DRM. All users have been directed to a Netflix help page, which states the following if you receive the discontinuation message. It means Netflix is no longer available or will no longer be available on your device. You can still enjoy Netflix on many TVs and streaming devices, as well as phones, tablets, and computers. Look, the simple fact is that, like all technology, streaming players have a lifespan to them. And what amazes me is people say, I just bought this. Well, according to this, it's a 7-year-old device.
Yeah.
Did you just buy a 7-year-old device, or did you, in fact, buy it 7 years ago?
I always use the analogy, you know, like there's 7 dog or cat years per human year. For computer devices, it's more like 20.
Yes, exactly
right.
So a
7-year-old computing device, that's really, really old.
And for anyone looking for a new device, thankfully, there are a growing number of cheap streaming players for $30 or less. Walmart even has one for $20 or less. These devices will make sure you can watch Netflix for years to come. Netflix has a dedicated satellite website that promotes its supported list of services, whether streaming media players, smart TVs, or game consoles. Check it out if you're looking for a new streaming device, and I'll have Steve post that in just a second. If you can tear yourself away from your favorite binge, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. And yeah, I find that people don't know how long ago they bought a thing.
Yep.
I just bought that. No.
The future seems so far away, and the past is recent.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right.
And back to Netflix, this is after they started cracking down on password sharing.
Right.
So, you know, your child who lives in another state may not count anymore.
Right. That's exactly right.
Or your kid that, you know, in college at a dorm may not count anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. But I tell you, it's interesting to watch it happen. My daughter had that problem with her PS something, whatever they're called. And her PlayStation thing, Vita, whatever it's called, and I said you got like 8 devices in your house, the other 7 all do Netflix. Just get over yourself. It's simple enough. Of course, right now she's in Hawaii, so, and I hate her. Just so you understand, she's having a great time. But yeah, it's interesting. To talk to people about how long they've had their devices. I spent 20 years as a systems administrator, so I keep records. When I buy something, I write down the serial number, I write down what it's running, when I bought it, how long the warranty is, all of that stuff. And I'll take a look. For example, I looked at one of my Chromebooks the other day, and I said, man, this is great. I wonder how much longer I've got on updates. Oh, 1 year. Left because this is a 6-year-old Chromebook. Okay.
And that's part of the problem.
I remember buying it 6 years ago, but okay.
They may be 6, 7, 10 years old, but they still work fine.
They still work fine. And that's why something like Chrome OS Flex or putting Linux on an old computer works great.
Right. They work fine until you wake up one morning and Windows 11 is on it or, you know, Mac OS Sonoma is on it, and suddenly it's really, really slow.
Right. And that, you know, we saw that in a couple of questions here, and The fact is that you can very easily take an old machine that is now no longer useful, in air quotes, and put Linux on it, put OS Flex on it, and turn it into a useful machine.
Yeah.
For a couple of years, I did that for some folks going over to some African countries and doing Doctors Without Borders and stuff like that and bringing laptops with them. To give away. You know, we would take old laptops, we would put Linux on them because that's legal, and then Chrome OS Flex because that's legal, and we would send them overseas and people could use a computer now that they did not have access to. And these were 10-year-old machines. And yeah, if you're going to put something on a 10-year-old machine, it's going to be slower than it will be on a new machine, and at some point that hard drive is going to die. Et cetera, you know, there's no magic here. Just because you put a new operating system doesn't automatically give you new hardware. But the reality is you've got a usable machine now. And for people who want to play with Linux or want to play with Chrome OS Flex or who need a second machine, I know a lot of people who will take that old laptop, and if they're traveling, they'll take the old laptop. Because if they lose it, oh well, they've now lost a 10-year-old computer. Oh, well.
And a lot of times if you're going to a less than friendly country, you should throw that device away when you come back home.
When you come back home is exactly right.
You never know what they got put on it.
When I did travel, which I haven't done in a couple of years now, but when I did travel, I took a Chromebook with me. It did everything I needed it to do. And when I came home, if I needed to, I could just wipe it and put everything back on again. Easy. No problem. Or I would take a Linux box with me and a Linux laptop. And again, I could wipe it out if I needed to. But if I lost it, oh, well, it's not my main machine. It's not my using everyday user machine. And it doesn't have anything special on it. You know, we went to the very first time we traveled to Arizona to see my sister-in-law. And my daughter was 10, maybe. I loaded up, you can, if you bought a movie on Google Play, you can download it to a Chromebook. In those days, just to a Chromebook and play it, offline. So I loaded up a whole bunch of movies on that thing. And you know, you sit on that plane for 8 hours. Here you go, honey. Just sit and look at this for the next 8 hours. You're good. Here's movies for you. So it's easy enough to do. And again, if something had happened where that laptop had been stolen or that Chromebook had been stolen or damaged in some way, I don't care. I don't care. It's a $150 laptop. It ran great. It did everything we needed it to do for the trip. All we were doing was, you know, playing online, looking at our email, et cetera, et cetera. It did all of that just fine. I didn't need more. So it worked great. And using an old computer for that or a Chromebook for that means you don't have much to worry about. So it's a pretty nice deal. And if you've got an old system lying around and a little bit of spare time and a little bit of curiosity, throwing Linux or Chrome OS Flex on it is free.
So that's like the old days of tinkering in DOS. You were done running your VisiCalc for the day, and what else can I do? And back when you had to write your own programs.
Well, right. Right. And I still remember typing
programs out of the magazines. I even got one of those scanners.
Yeah.
What was the name of it?
CAT. The CAT scanner?
Yeah, where you scanned the code in the magazine and it typed the computer code into your computer for you.
Yep. And in fact, Byte Magazine and a couple of others had the formatted the code so that it was like, what, 2 inches?
Yeah, just
that
so
was it the would scanner.
Fit that was the width of the scanner was. Yep.
Yeah. I did that as well.
And then every now and then there'd be an actual disc that came with the magazine.
I was doing some, I'll pretend and call it cleaning in my computer room the other day. And I found a box of tapes for my Jupiter Ace, which was essentially a Sinclair computer, the ZX1, I think it was called. But it ran fourth instead of basic. And I found a bunch of tapes because it had, you know, you plugged it into a tape player. I actually still have the tape player. I don't know if it works, but I've got it. And you would put it in that. And of course, you could run the tape 5 or 6 times before it started to stretch. Unless you had, because generally on the less expensive, let's be honest, cheaper, tape recorders, only the capstan, which is the thing that turns, only one of them turned. So it would pull the tape through, which stretched it. On the more expensive ones, both capstan turned, so it didn't pull so hard and the tape would last longer. But yeah, generally speaking, yeah, we had, I've still got a bunch of tapes and they're all marked with like tape one. So I don't know what the heck is on them anymore. But whatever it is, I'm sure it's fascinating stuff, and I'm sorry I can't play it any longer. But yeah. Oh! 966 Jazz. That's 966.
Apparently, the internet was still working.
Toll free 800-790-0415.
Because the stream is all up, and we're being lit by the glow of our screens.
Yeah, exactly. Or pledge securely online at jazz901.org. We need your pledges. You can see it live if you are on YouTube or Facebook or Twitch. You saw we lost power. I don't know what happened on the stream, on the live radio, the terrestrial radio. But for the rest of you, make a call. Make the pledge. We clearly need to fix something. And that's going to require you making that call and making that pledge. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or pledge securely online at jazz901.org.
We're probably going to see a big backhoe or something out on the road.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, hi, Nick. Yes, has anyone noticed Google Chrome has changed the tabs on the top?
Yeah, they've made a change. There's a different way that things work now for the tabs, and it came out with, I think, this very last update.
Yes, my question is: the first tab is an arrow pointing down, which lists all of the past places you've been, the websites you've been on.
Recent, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, is that going to be there all the time, or can I remove that?
I don't believe it is removable at this moment.
Oh, okay, so it is quick and handy, but I was just curious if it was permanent, and they changed the look of the other tabs, it looks like.
Yeah, they did. It's mostly a cosmetic change, but there were a couple of actual physical changes, and they're permanent, I believe.
What version?
Yeah, the first one is that arrow pointing down, which is the history. That's a new one.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, I don't have that yet. I'm on 118. I'm checking for updates.
Right.
I only usually run Chrome once a week when I'm here.
Yeah, it just came on this week.
Yeah. It's a brand new update. I'm also using 118 here, and it isn't there yet, but it will be on the next update.
Yeah, well, it's actually a sleeker look all the way across the top. It's like a updated, more modern look.
Yeah, that's the point. You know, that one of the things that Google is not terrifically good at is keeping things sexy looking.
Yes, that's what it is. This is like they went to somebody dreamed up a better look for them.
There it is.
Yeah.
The new look in Chrome, it's blue.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
And I think you can change the colors or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. So if you go into your customize Chrome at the bottom of the page, there's supposed to be a little pencil icon.
Yeah, when they first came out, the first page was, look, you can do this, the color's lighter, darker, I don't know, I just bypassed it. But anyway,
right.
Okay, well, thank you for that information.
All right, thanks. And
bye-bye.
And one of the people in the chat asked, are there instructions for removing Windows and installing Linux? When you create a Linux bootable CD or thumb drive,
which has instructions on that Linux website.
Right, which is on that Linux's website. One of the things that you do is you boot it up, and it will say, do you want to install? There's an icon to install install Linux on your hard drive. And when you click on that, one of the things that it will ask you is, do you want to run alongside Windows, or do you want to replace Windows entirely? And you pick which one you want to do, and it does that. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Scott from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Scott. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. This is a game about my new laptop, which I called a few weeks ago. And I got help. It's working now. It sees the internet now, which it didn't do when I called you.
Which is hard to fix when you can't get to the internet to download anything.
Oh, that's right. So I already done the migration, and apparently it stopped in the middle of migration. It stopped after I had migrated all of my operating system stuff. And then, but when it hadn't done my data, I was able to now migrate my data on there, but to a different, there are these partitions. It went to a different partition.
Different username.
Than the user. And some of my files use various programs. How do I get that data from one place to the other place? To the user.
You put it in the shared folder first. So in your users folder, so under hard drive, under users, there is a separate folder for each username. There's also a folder there called shared, which can be used for stuff to share between your user accounts. So if you put it in there from one user.
It will read my data when I share it like that.
Right. You put it in the shared folder in one account and then log into the other account, and you can pull it out of the shared folder.
All right.
What you may have missed during the migration assistant is there's an option to replace the existing username if it sees one, or to make a new username.
I did not see that.
Yeah. Sometimes it can depend on how much data you've already got in that user account. So we've had to do that a couple of times where somebody's got a newer OS on their computer than the new computer comes with.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to update the new computer first, but you have to have a user account to do that with. So we have to create it. We create a user, do the update, and then during migration, we can say replace that user. And sometimes if it's the same username, so if it was Scott on the old one and Scott on the new one, you actually get a migration conflict error because it can't do the same name, so it will give you that option. But we see that option, just, you know, we usually make something called admin or temp.
Right.
And it lets you remove that first user account when you are migrating a second user account into it. So that usually comes up after after you finish calculating how much it has to migrate.
And, of course, depending on how full your hard drive is, you may have to move things into the temp folder
rather than
and
copy
then move them,
them
out
to
the other users rather than copy, because then you get three copies of it.
Right.
Currently, I mean, it should be enough space for both. But I don't know if both is double. The other one double, I don't know about that.
Well, you'd end up with three copies. Yeah. If you copied it, you'd have one copy in the old user, one copy in shared, and one copy in the new user.
Right. Great. Thank you.
Yep. All right.
So when you're dragging it, if you get a little green plus sign, that means you're copying. So you want to hold on the option key so it doesn't move instead of copy.
Right. Because you may not have enough room to have three copies of all your data.
It will stop. It won't start the copy if there's not enough room. I always hated Windows about that. It would copy, copy, copy. Oh, I'm full. It wouldn't look first. The Mac would look first. If it's close.
It's still annoying.
It's still annoying, yeah. If you got 60 gigs and you're copying 59 gigs, if it's close, it may try and then run out of space.
Right.
But if you got 60 gigs and you're copying 100, it says there's not enough room.
Well, of course, the other way you can do it is to put it all on a thumb drive.
Yeah.
Instead of copying it to the shared folder.
Yep.
That's slower, because generally speaking, USB is slower than
the
internal hard drive, but it would work.
Flash drives are slower yet.
Right, right, right. And so, you know, it would be slower, but it would definitely work. I copied some stuff over my network, and I'd forgotten that I wasn't on my gigabit wired network. I was on the Wi-Fi.
I had to use a USB 2 hard drive the other day. Oh, God, that's slow compared to USB 3.
Yeah. That's why I usually do my copies at night.
Yep.
I don't care how long it takes.
Yeah.
And a couple of my Raspberry Pis that I back up to are USB 2. And I don't care.
Yep.
Because it happens at 2 in the morning. And I don't care if it takes till 7 in the morning. It doesn't bother me. All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I especially want to thank those of you who were kind enough and generous enough to support this station and support this show by becoming members. You can still do that 24/7, 365 days a year at jazz901.org. In the meantime, I want to thank Dave Enright. No, I don't want to thank Dave Enright.
For not being here.
I want to thank Dave Enright for not being here. Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We will see you.